Hello, and welcome to the Complete Mathematics podcast, Teaching Together. I'm Dave Taylor, and today we're joined by my Complete Maths colleague, Johnny Hall.
Hello.
What are we looking at today, Johnny?
Today, we're looking at types of triangles, Dave.
This objective is in Stage 4, Unit 7 of the Complete Mathematics curriculum. You can access this objective and the whole curriculum made up of over 1,800 objectives for free at CompleteMaths.com. Before we get going, head to CompleteMaths.com/podcast, where you can download the slide deck of tasks from today's episode. And once you've downloaded this, let's dive into Teach, Do, Practice, Behave with types of triangles and their properties. Before we teach pupils a new idea, we must be sure that we're doing the right maths. If we're not and it's too easy, we run the risk of boredom. And if it's too hard, we run the risk of behaviour and motivation issues as pupils develop the idea that they're not a maths person. And we know that this isn't the case. Everyone can learn maths well. We can check that we're doing the right maths by assessing prerequisite knowledge for this new mathematical idea. So Johnny, what are we expecting pupils to know before we teach types of triangles and their properties? And how might you go about testing them?
Okay, so this one always surprises me, this lesson, because like you kind of assume that kids know what triangles are, I find. But unless you ask the question, you can't be sure. So literally, what is a triangle is normally one of my first prerequisite testings. And I'll show them a series of triangles on the board and non-triangles as well. So we're using these non-examples. And it's amazing how people think like how an arrowhead or a deltoid pointing upwards is a triangle because it looks triangly, even though it's got four sides. And if you put a picture of an upside down in quotes triangle as well, kids will say, oh, that's not a triangle, sir, because it's upside down. And these misconceptions need stamping out really early on. Like a triangle just needs to be like an enclosed shape with three straight sides. And you find yourself going off on one and all these definitions of polygons and things like that. But unless kids know what a triangle are, it's going to be really hard to sort of answer what are the different types of triangles. So that's the main prerequisite. The other one is angle. If kids don't have a real understanding of what an angle is as a measure of turn, then they're going to really struggle when it comes to actually, you know, comparing triangles and saying which triangles are isosceles, which ones are equilateral, and so on. And just because two angles look the same don't necessarily mean they are the same. You've got things like angles notation as well that you might want to introduce, the two little dashes that you put on a side to show that the side lengths are the same. There's a whole load of stuff. Now, some of this is definitely prerequisite stuff, such as the what is a triangle stuff. But some of it I find myself year after year teaching as I'm going through the topic myself. It's very hard to teach the types of triangles without introducing kids to the proper sort of geometric notation as you're going through it.
Yeah, so when you talk about proper geometric notation, those little dashes, Johnny, they're called dash marks.
I knew you'd have a name for them. Sorry. I just call them little dashes. That's where I could probably do with improving my subject knowledge, to be fair, on them. Yeah. On these, what they call them, hatch marks, did you say?
Hatch marks, yeah. The other thing that I wanted to say was I hear what you're saying about, I guess it's sort of incomplete teaching. I mean, you and I both teach secondary. So you get 11-year-olds coming in, not really knowing what a triangle is. And my experience more recently has been not really knowing what a hexagon is. I've been doing perimeter of compound shapes, sort the L shape up, and you go, right, you're in this hexagon. And they're like,
what are you talking about, hexagon? Yeah, yeah. Like, it is amazing. They only ever see the classic hexagon, don't they?
Yeah.
You're the hexagon. So the L shape is one of my favorite hexagons. I get that. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. So now that we've assessed prerequisite knowledge and we know that pupils are ready to learn the new idea, then we're now ready to teach. In the teach phase, the idea is entirely novel to pupils sitting just beyond their current level of understanding. The teacher shares key facts and uses metaphors and models to explain and describe so that pupils can make meaning and form connections with their current schema. So, Johnny, how are you teaching this then?
Okay, so I've already mentioned briefly in the sort of prereq phase when you test them what a triangle is, I love to use non-examples, non-examples side by side here for getting kids to focus on the actual difference between the types of triangles. So I might show maybe three isosceles triangles and one scaling triangle to begin with, and just have that image on the board, four triangles, three of them isosceles, one's not, and get the kids to reason why one of them is the odd one out. I'm not necessarily giving names from it at this particular point. I want them to reason geometrically which one is the odd one out and why. Oh, it's because that one's got three different length sides compared to the other ones, which have two equal lengths. I say, okay, that's great. We call that one isosceles. And I know you're probably going to go into all the etymology of the names here, which again is something my subject knowledge could probably be improved with. I'm not great with that, but I can see on slide three, you've got some Latin coming in on all sorts. So that's my main way of introducing the types of triangles, basically showing you what it's not and showing you what it is and getting kids to reason, have these discussions in the class. What's the difference between them all?
Yeah, so isosceles means equal legs, and that's the two legs that are the same length, normally going down towards the bottom, like you say in the classic triangle. But when it's the upside down triangle, they're going to the top.
Yeah. Yeah, legs of triangles. Yeah, I do use that vocabulary.
So we did say before this, before we started recording, that teach and do, so it becomes a bit muddy here. And so what we'll do is we'll transition out of talking about the teach phase and we'll focus a little bit more on the doing, and that'll come up next. Now that we've talked about the teach phase, let's talk about do. In the do phase, pupils are simply replicating what they've been shown in the teach phase and are performing with this new idea. We should say that in the do phase, deep and meaningful learning probably hasn't yet occurred. Performance is a poor proxy for learning. The do phase complements the teach phase by allowing pupils to develop confidence and fluency in working with the new knowledge. The teaching at this stage is responsive, with the teacher amending models or examples to make stronger connections in pupil schema. The aim is for pupils to be successful in replicating the novel idea, which maintains pupil motivation before we start to explore the idea in greater depth. So what might do look like, Johnny?
Okay, so for me, two different types of paper are really important here. So your standard rectilinear grid, your normal squared paper, and then also a bunch of isometric paper as well. So I literally want kids to be doing lots of drawing of these triangles. So on the standard graph paper, the standard white 1 centimeter square paper here, I want kids to be trying to draw different types of isosceles and scaling triangles, some of them right angled, some of them not right angled. And then loads of kids will all declare that they've drawn an equilateral triangle as well on square centimeter paper. It'll look equilateral, but obviously it's very hard to draw an equilateral triangle on square paper, because obviously you can't go through one of the grid points. And that leads into a discussion, or it could be used later in the discussion down the line when you want to behave mathematically with Pythagoras or something like that. The idea that you can't draw an equilateral triangle on a normal square grid by going through the exact points. So that's where the isometric paper comes in. On an isometric paper, you can draw all four types of the triangles. I say all four types of the triangles, I shouldn't do. I say there's three types of triangles. I say there's equilateral, isosceles, and scaling. And some of those can be right angled. So I like to separate those three, isosceles, scaling, equilateral. I like to separate that and remove it from right angled. I just like to say that some triangles happen to be right angled, but the three main ones that we're looking at are those three that I've mentioned. And also you can have that discussion about, okay, which of these triangles can't be right angled. You're never going to get a right angled equilateral triangle is where we want to get the kids to be realizing. They'll try and prove you wrong. Say I've drawn one, and then you have the discussions about angle sums in triangles, how in an equilateral they must all be 60 degrees. So how is it possible to have a right angled equilateral triangle? Basically, like when I teach this lesson, I often get like a full sort of big 50-minute block of like all these discussions and kids trying to prove me wrong, and then I'm like trying to give a mathematical reason why they can't be right and stuff like that. It's a really good lesson. It's a very, very kind of like discussion-based before we get onto the practice stuff, which we'll go on to later, where we get to explore the maths a little bit in more depth.
I mean, I've got to assume it's not a Johnny Hall lesson unless it's got mini whiteboards involved. So Of course.
Well, to be fair, mini whiteboards are useful if you want them to get the hatch mark. See, Dave, I'm learning. Yeah. But for me, like, if you want them to show you that they can draw you an isosceles triangle, they need square paper in front of them, or they need isometric paper, and you need to physically start kind of check it either. And I find a visualizer really useful here. So if a kid draws a great example of an isosceles triangle, stick it under the visualizer, the whole class can see. So although mini whiteboards are useful here, I think it's one of those where you need to get in and amongst the kids circulating, and a lot of visualizer work, picking kids' work up, showing it on the visualizer, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think I'd use the mini whiteboards as more of a hinge, see if I can move on, get some whole class responses. Maybe I'll put a triangle on the board and ask them to write down the name of it.
E for equal, actual S for scalene, I for isosceles. So yeah. Board. Then you have that debate whether an equal actual triangle is also an isosceles triangle, Dave.
You raise a valid point, and I'm going to say no. Or is it an equal actual triangle?
I say yes.
Yes, of an isosceles triangle.
I think it's I think isosceles just means two equal sides. It doesn't say anything about more than two equal sides, does it?
Okay.
Well, I think this is a discussion. Maybe this is a poll for Twitter, but I'd put an equal actual as a special case of a isosceles, just like a square is a special case of a rectangle.
And I stand corrected.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure. But maybe we stick that out on Twitter after we release the podcast. We can have this as a poll underneath. And then we can see who's right, Dave or Johnny.
So having worked through the teach and do phases and pupils have been successful in developing fluency, we're going to segue into the practice phase. In the practice phase, pupils move beyond simply performing and begin to develop more flexible knowledge of the idea. Since we've moved through the teach and do phases, pupils are now fluent with the idea, so we're now directing their attention to underlying structures, relationships, and principles, bringing about strong connections with prior knowledge. Looking for a well-structured and intelligently designed task that will aid pupils in forming links with their prior knowledge. So, Johnny, what kind of activity might we be using here?
Well, have you ever heard of this task book that I've made, Dave?
Never heard you mention it.
All right, well, for complete mass, I put together this 160-page free task booklet. And within that, there's like loads and loads of triangle-based tasks. If you go to the contents page and just like do a control F for triangles, there's probably about 5 or 6 different tasks. And they're all really good for practicing. One that I would point out is my triangles on a 3x3 grid. Now, I first got this idea, like, probably going on, I don't know, 10 years ago now. I went to the STEM Centre in York for some manipulative CPD, and it was Mike Anderson and Steve Lyon showed me this task, and it's basically 3x3 pin geo board. How many different triangles can you form on it? And it's such a good task. Now, if you haven't got geo boards, don't worry, it works just as well on isometric paper as well. Sorry, not isometric, just your normal square paper. I print out a sheet of dotted paper. I use MathBot principles to do this. And I just get them to sort of use their ruler and partition it into 3x3 grids. Just how many different triangles that you can draw. And again, this is such a great low floor task. Everyone gets stuck in and they're all trying to find brand new triangles. And again, it's a case of bringing them up to the board under the visualizer. Or if you've got one of those interactive boards, they can come up and draw the triangle on as well. And you naturally get these discussions about congruency and whether this triangle is actually the same as the other one, just been rotated or translated or so on. So eventually you probably want to make the rule that we're not going to allow congruent triangles. And kids love to learn new words like congruence. I did it with year 7, like maybe it took a couple of months ago now. And then kids kept trying to show me a brand new triangle. And eventually, now a spoiler alert here, if you don't want to hear it, just kind of skip the next 5 seconds. But there's 8 different triangles that you can make on a 3x3 grid. And once they've found them all, well done, give them a pat on the back and stuff. And like, kids will still try and find your 9th one. Like, they'll not give up trying to find them. But then you can extend it to things like non-congruent triangles as well. Okay, well, how many of each? Now we know there's 8 different types of triangles on this grid. Can we classify them into equilateral scaling isosceles? And then can we say how many of each different type there actually are? How many equilateral triangles you're not going to actually draw, obviously, on your square grid, but how many of this particular type of scaling triangle can you draw? And there's a whole load of things you can investigate, which I'll talk about more detail in the behave phase.
Cool. And then the task on slide 8, you've called this forming triangles, and I've put a tag on this saying impossible triangles. And this is a nice precursor to constructions, I found, when you're constructing triangles. And so there are some triangles that you download a worksheet from some dodgy website, and there's this triangle on there that's an impossible triangle. And it's normally a perimeter question. You literally can't make that triangle. And I guess this task is that.
Yeah, it's a Q's and R based task, but I'm sure you could adapt it if you don't have the Q's and R rods knocking about. You essentially pick three different lengths and see if it forms a triangle. Q's and R rods are obviously naturally great for this. And I've done this actually with my little five-year-old. I've not gone into the detail of scaling isosceles with equilateral yet, but I have played the game of pick up three Q's and R rods and see if it forms a triangle. And under what conditions can you form a triangle? And obviously, if the two short legs are not as long as the longest side, is that the right way around I've said it?
I think so, yeah.
You can't form a triangle. And yeah, great fun just playing that game. It's far too young, really, to be looking at all the properties of isosceles in equilateral, but he had great fun forming these triangles. So I'm hoping it's setting a nice foundation for when he does explore this later on in primary or even year 7. It's a great task if you've not seen it. It's page 71 in the task book for that one.
Yeah, so as pupils are developing more flexible knowledge, forming strong connections between the novel idea and their existing schema, we're then going to look at segue into the behaving phase, and we'll talk about that next. We deepen understanding through behaving mathematically, and if our aim is to develop mathematicians, then this phase is the most important of all. When behaving mathematically, maturation matters. In this phase, tasks are chosen from well-embedded and mature ideas that connect to the novel idea. A good rule of thumb is that this kind of maturation takes 2 years, so we're looking for pupils to transition from specialising to conjecturing and generalising, and through to analysing and reasoning with a related idea from roughly 2 stages previous. So for the types of triangles and their properties, Johnny, you've got 3 more tasks. Not three more, but three tasks in the behaviour.
Well, yeah, the one that I mentioned on the practice phase where like we're literally identifying the isosceles scaling triangles on this 3x3 grid. You've only just scratched the surface of that task now because, for example, the natural extension to that would be literally next lesson what I did when I did quadrilaterals on the 3x3 grid. How many different ones can you make? And can you make rhombuses? Can you make parallelograms, kites, and all that sort of stuff? So you can extend it naturally just by adding an extra point. But later on down the line, when you start looking at Pythagoras and surds, okay, you've drawn all these 8 different triangles on this 3x3 grid. What's the length of all their sides? Or if you're doing a bit of trigonometry, how many different angles can you make within these triangles as well? What's the area of these triangles, of these 8 different triangles? There's so much that you could explore. And then you can just kind of revisit this task again and again and again. By the end of year 11, my class would be bored of me revisiting this task, to be honest, because there's so much maths in it, which you don't uncover the first time you do this task. There's no way I'm going to start looking at angles and stuff. But to be fair, you might start looking at angles in year 7, like, can you spot a right angle in these triangles you made? But you're not going to use trigonometry to find some of the harder ones. So it's a great task. It's got loads of legs, if you excuse the pun. The triangle pun there, for behaving mathematically with. And I've put some prompts on there. What other things could you ask? What's the perimeter and area of each triangle? What if you overlap 2 triangles? What's the area of the overlapping shape as well? What else could you investigate, basically? It's a task I use in some of my CPD sessions where I try and get sort of delegates to think and behave a little bit mathematically. Like, okay, here's this boilerplate task. Here's this baseline task. What else could you run with it? What other topics could you link together with it? And surds, Pythagoras, trigonometry are just natural things to link with it.
Yeah, there's a John Mason quote that I can't quite find in my memory at the moment.
There's no such thing as a rich task, only tasks used richly, I think.
Yeah, and you can take a task that someone's used incredibly well one day and use it really badly the next day. And so a task is only as good as how it's used, is what I always find.
This triangles one, it is in the task book, but also, you know, I make those weekly videos on tasks. This is one of those where I have done a weekly video for. If you check out the Complete Maths YouTube or the Podia courses, you'll see this task and the video explaining exactly how I use it in the classroom. Probably better than I've managed to explain on this podcast, because I go into a bit more detail in the task.
Yeah, so on slide 10, we're moving away from a 3x3 geoboard and we've got circular geoboards.
Yeah, I mean, this is a lovely little segue into things like circle theorems and stuff like that. There's at least two task booklet ones. My favourite one is probably the one on slide 11, where you just put, you have, I think it's a 12-pin geoboard. I mean, the number of pins don't really matter so long as it's a factor of 360. If you have a factor of 360 pin geoboard and you form a triangle on it, you can find the angles and those triangles. And there's a couple of ways of doing it. You can either use circle theorems. If you use that center pin at the center of the circle, you can look at that circle theorem where the angle in the center is twice the angle on the circumference. Or you can always form three smaller isosceles triangles by taking the three vertices on the outside of the circumference and drawing a radii into the center, and you always form three isosceles triangles, and you can work out the angles from there as well. There's plenty you can do with this task, and it makes nice links with circle theorems as well. So just trying to link all these topics together, which is what behaving mathematically is all about.
I imagine that you probably inspired some people to get rummaging through their maths storerooms, trying to find the geoboards.
Geoboards are great. Yeah, and again, shout out to the STEM Centre, Mike Anderson and Steve Lyon, because they showed me that task as well. And it's one of those tasks that you see it once and it sticks with you for the rest of your life. It's a brilliant task.
Well, that's it for this episode of Teaching Together. Remember that you can check out the entire curriculum, that's over 1,800 objectives, for free at completemaths.com. We hope that you've taken a lot of inspiration from this episode, and if you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review on your chosen podcast provider. And please feel free to pass the pod to both colleagues and friends so that we can continue to improve our
teaching together.
Take care.